Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your soul, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in control,
y'all. Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart.
Come to the mic at this time.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I appreciate that. It makes me smile. I'm so happy to be with you today. Although we did miss last Saturday, still here we are today. And we are continuing, finishing up the book of Joel. But before we get into the book of Joel, I'd like to read a psalm. And it's a familiar one. We don't need the book for this one. Of course, it's Psalm 23, Psalm of the Divine Shepherd, a Psalm of David. Yes, 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 yes. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's one of our favorite psalms, and as we teach our children, and always use it because it is so very, very important for us to know who we are and whose we are. And so the Lord will add a blessing to the reading of his beautiful and wonderful word. I selected that because we will be talking about the Valley of Jehoshaphat, and it's very, very important in our study today. And for us to know that valley, what the valley symbolizes for us. We will be talking today about the Valley of Decision, the Valley of Jehoshaphat, and what the valley means to us personally. And so, with no further ado, let us go into the book of Joel. We'll be finishing it up today. Well, as we know from the weeks before, that the book of Joel is written by the prophet Joel. But he is not announcing a coming judgment of the Lord, as many of the other prophets have. He is describing in the book of Joel the present state of Judah. It has been devastated by swarms of locusts, first chewing, then swarming, then crawling, and fully consuming all the vegetation of Judah. Judah will experience a time of famine and financial ruin because of the locusts and the drought that followed, to add insult to injury. Joel begins his book by addressing the elders of Judah, instructing them to tell their children and children's children about the devastation brought about by the locusts, because this devastation is absolutely incredibly devastating. Joel then, after he addresses the elders, Joel then addresses the drunkard. And one of the interesting things about this book of Joel, and also about the commentaries written by Fillmore and company in Unity, those commentaries pretty much focus on intoxicating beverages and drunkenness, etc. So it's interesting that the commentators did zero in on drunkards. But of course, I could see why, because chapter 1 begins. As a matter of fact, he says, here in chapter 1, verse 5, "Awake, you drunkards, and weep, And wail, all you drinkers of wine, because of the new wine, for it has been cut off from your mouth. And he mentions wine another time or two in that first chapter. So the Judeans actually, but what we are saying is, what he is saying is that the Judeans are in a desperate situation. As he goes on to chapter 2, Joel makes effective use of this natural catastrophe, the locusts eating everything in sight, and the drought that came along with the locust attack, as an illustration of a far greater judgment to come. Because of this judgment, the other judgment that is coming, he mentions that there may be an army that is marching toward the Judeans right as we speak. And if you think this is bad, that the locusts and the drought are bad, wait until you experience this army. Anyway, he says that there's something that we can do. We can repent. He calls on the clergy. He says, gird yourselves and lament. Come here and lie in sackcloth and ashes all night. Consecrate a fast. Call a sacred assembly, for the day of the Lord is at hand. And this is the first mention that we have of the day of the Lord. And so here he is saying to the people, you can avoid all of this catastrophe by repenting and coming to the Lord. He says, he even gives them the words to use. He says, O Lord, to you I cry out. And so he continues to talk about the day of the Lord. It occurs 18 times in prophetic literature, especially in Joel and Zephaniah. It does not refer to the end of the world. Traditional Christians see this as being the end of the world, but us New Thought Christians, we see it quite differently. On that day, there are supposed to be changes in the cosmos, changes in the moon, sun refuses to shine. But it is, and yes, it is a very important day. But the day of the Lord is the expression that highlights the unmistakable appearance of God in our lives. God will make visible his rule of righteousness and will speak to us in words that we can understand. The first mention of the day of the Lord in Joel chapter 1 suggests that the priests and the people cry out to the Lord in their suffering and devastation. And he says that God will answer, for God is their only hope. Now, I know that many of us have been in situations whereby we had no place to turn. We had tried everything. We had gone to friends, family, everybody. We had done everything we could do, but there was no place to turn. And so if we turn to God, we know that we would get the answers that we needed, the help that we would need. And I don't know if any of you have experienced that. I certainly have. And we'll talk about our experiences in just a second, but I'm not going to go into it right this minute. So in chapter 2, Joel prophesies the imminent attack on Judah by an enemy army. And so they've gone through the devastation of the locusts. They have a drought going on, and he says an army is coming. But God will save you if we return to God, for God is merciful, slow to anger, of great kindness. In addition to safeguarding them, God will restore to them the days the locusts had eaten. And last time I was on, I spoke about the locusts, the return of the locusts, of the days the locusts had eaten, of all of the horrors that we had suffered during the time of the locusts. And we said that the locusts certainly symbolized those things that we were addicted to, those things that we allowed to sap our energy away from our devotion to God, away from those sacred things that we should have been using our energy to hold close to us, to apprehend. We allowed those things to go because we were engrossed in our addictions, our materialism, our those things, especially materialism and our and addictions. We used that energy to feed our sensual selves, to enjoy these sensations, to accumulate what we consider to be power, what we consider to be things that are of value. And we come to a point where we find that they are of little or no value. As a matter of fact, like in the case of alcoholism, we have allowed this substance to deteriorate our bodies, our minds, and our spirits. And so, therefore, where do we turn when we realize this, when the end comes, when we realize that this is of no value to us, it is a detriment to us, we must get rid of it, where do we turn? Joel suggests that we turn to God, and God will answer. And he knows that God will answer. And so the Judeans in this book of Joel repent. And God's promise of physical restoration, of peace and plenty for Judah come true. The Judeans experience physical restoration, spiritual and natural restoration, and physical restoration. If we look at chapter 2, verses 2, I want to just read here, verse 27. Then you shall know that I am in the midst of Israel, and that I am the Lord your God. There is no other. My people shall never be put to shame. And 28, and it shall come to pass afterwards that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your old men shall dream dreams, and your young men shall see visions. And also on my men servants and on my maid servants I will pour out my spirit in those days. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And here it is mentioned again, the day of the Lord. And it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, among the remnant whom the Lord calls. And so here we have another day of the Lord that is coming. And so in this day of the Lord, there will be physical restoration, spiritual restoration, and natural restoration. And so we know that that can happen. And so I did speak on the day of the Lord as introduced by Joel in chapters 1 and 2, and we spoke of how the Judeans repented, and what the day of the Lord meant to them. And now we can look at what it means to us. And in our discussion of the day of the Lord, it occurs for us when we, having no place else to turn to God and come to terms with truth, the truth of our responsibility for the plight we are in, the truth of the law of cause and effect, the law of compensation, in other words. And we become truly open to understanding and doing the things of spirit. Now, metaphysically, let's look at the day of the Lord. Day means the degree of unfoldment and understanding, a state of mind in which we have released all our personal thoughts and actions and rest in the realization that we have touched the mind of spirit. When we go to God as our last resort, in our desperation, in our humility, in knowing there is nothing else, we are in a psychological, spiritual state of humility where we can actually feel the touch of spirit. We can get into spirit, get into the consciousness that we can understand the things of spirit and the revelations of spirit. While we are in those spaces where we are addicted to or sold out to a particular negative experience, we cannot do this. But when we decide that we have, and I say decide, that we are giving up all of that and we are going to be allow spirit to lead us, guide us, and direct us, this is the day of the Lord. So this is the day when we can are open to understanding the things of spirit and the revelations of spirit that will come to us personally. So the day of the Lord is a day of illumination. The last time we spoke, as I said, we went over the two aspects of illumination in the day of the Lord. Now, I spoke about the law of cause and effect, and that's one of the aspects of illumination. It is the time when we reap what we have sown and we understand it. We keep in mind that God is not responsible for the plight that we are in. We are responsible. And if we do not like the negative results of our actions and our thinking, then we can change them. We cannot hold negative beliefs and get good results. And once we understand that, open to God and to Spirit's leading, then we are experiencing the day of the Lord. And so last time we spoke, we talked about that cause and effect. And today, Reverend Mary Lou is going to speak about the second aspect of illumination in the day of the Lord. So there's a second aspect. And Reverend Mary Lou, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. So, Reverend Ellen, let's see. Now, the second mystical meaning of the day of judgment, the day of the Lord, pertains to an individual experience, our individual experience. It has nothing to do with any outer events or events. Its time cannot be predicted, for it depends upon the individual, the individual's determination to pursue truth and his willingness to let it transform him and his life. It happens before the new birth experience. It is vividly described by Jesus in the Gospel of Mark, the 13th chapter. The day of the Lord is a day or a moment or a period when a big battle takes place within the individual, in his consciousness. Armageddon's location is unknown, but it is believed to be Mount Zion in Jerusalem. It is believed that the Messiah would make his appearance here, and he will, metaphysically speaking. A mount is a place in our consciousness, an elevated state where one is prepared to release old beliefs and accept new ideas of truth, to release what is false in consciousness and to accept what is true. The Battle of Armageddon is the conflict between truth thoughts and error thoughts, in our consciousness. Now, many people have not reached the point in their soul development where they are even ready for this great battle of Armageddon. If a person rejects truth outright, he doesn't get to this point. Old beliefs don't die easily, especially the ones that are considered true in religion. The only way to get to this Mount Zion or Armageddon is to persistently pursue the truth through thick and thin, even if it hurts you psychologically and physically to do so. Keep on studying and praying in spite of confusion and lack of understanding. All means continue, whether you seem to be getting quote-unquote outer results. So many give up too easily. So many give up when the pressure is put on them by well-meaning friends who want to, quote-unquote, save them from what they believe to be heresies. This is a battle that is going to be fought. The prophets forecast it. Jesus said it would happen. Jesus even gives a vivid description, symbolically, of some of the psychological things that would happen in a person when this battle begins. Describes the confusion, the frustration, and the struggle to understand. One may think he is losing his mind, and his friends may assure him he is, if he keeps up this foolishness. There may even be physical reactions due to this stirring up on consciousness, which H. Emily Cady calls chemicalization in her book, Lessons in Truth. Although this is a challenging time, it is also a time for really rejoicing. It may seem that others are enjoying their peace by remaining consciousness where they are. Some cling desperately to the old traditions at this time, thinking that they will avoid the conflict. But they won't avoid it. They can't. They can only delay it or prolong it. The Battle of Armageddon doesn't have to be a 50-year war, but many drag it out even longer than that. As in many battles, there are intermittent lulls that delude us into thinking the battle is over. However, over until the new birth experience takes place, until the Messiah appears on Mount Zion, the place in our consciousness where we realize our oneness with God. We realize that he is within us. The turmoil doesn't have to last long if the resolve to let go, to sacrifice our old false beliefs is strong. If we have that resolve, the victory will be immediate and we can get on with the true development, spiritual consciousness. When the battle is raging, is no time to discuss your beliefs with conservatives who do not understand this. It is not a time to try to get others to follow you in your new efforts to discover the truth. They don't understand, and they will help defeat you and bring you back into captivity where they are, which is the fold of traditionalism, quote unquote. don't be reluctant to undertake this battle. Remember, the battle is not yours. It is God, and he will help you win it. It will seem that you are waging the battle in darkness, and this is probably right, but the light of his presence will see you through. Truth is always stronger than error thoughts, but truth must have our consent in order to help us. The day of judgment, the day of enlightenment, is not something to fear or to dread. The old world will pass away with all its habits, associations, and many other things that we thought were making us happy, but were not. Even the search for truth will be a new experience for us. After the old has passed away, we are told that there will be a reign of 1,000 years of peace before Satan is stirred up again for the final battle. The 1,000 years of peace is a time we are developing truth and consciousness in a peaceful way. There will be challenges, but they will not be like they were before we were committed to truth, to following our inner light. The 1,000 years is not a literal period of time. It only needs a sufficient amount of time to develop a complete consciousness of oneness with God that will enable us to make the great demonstration that Jesus called everlasting life and that Paul referred to when he said, the last enemy that shall be overcome is death. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Reverend Mary Lou. So we have the two aspects of the law of the Lord, the day of the Lord. And so as we move on to chapter 3 in Joel, here we have the announcement of the ultimate day of the Lord. The day of the Lord in chapter 2 is the day of the Lord that is experienced by the Judeans as they are helped by God itself, himself, herself, back to their to being fed and to being safe and to being restored and renewed. Chapter 3, however, moves to and what some commentators call the ultimate day of the Lord. And this takes place in the Valley of Jehoshaphat, called the Valley of Decision. And it is this judgment of God takes place there. And it is a promise to bring back the scattered and mistreated people of Israel. And it reads, for behold, in those days and at that time, when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will enter into judgment with them on account of my people, my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. And so this is a different grouping. This is a different meeting than the one in chapter 2. And so let's look at that one. And so many people have used this chapter as a warning that the nations will be retaliated upon by God himself, herself, itself, and God is going to punish them Actually, when we look at some of the meanings of the words here, as I said before, judgment is about recognizing the law of cause and effect. So although God, it says in verses 4 through 8, God warns the nations that he will retaliate against those who have mistreated his people. He vows to return your retaliation upon your own head to those who come against him or his people. And so actually he is stating the law of cause and effect. The retaliation will be that they will suffer those things that they had visited upon the God's people, the Israelites, the Judeans and the Israelites. And so we're talking about here the law of cause and effect. We're not talking about the destruction of the nations or the desolation of the nations, but it is about chastisement. It's about purification. It's about they will reap what they have sown. And I love the verses in chapter 3, 18 to 22. The blessings are on God's people, and Judah shall abide forever. And so I want to just look at some of the words that we find in chapter 3 so that we'll get some good idea about what God is saying to us here. So the day of the Lord in chapter 3. We're talking about the ultimate day of the Lord. A new birth takes place for the entire planet. Joel stresses the sovereign power of God over men and nations and nature. But God's promises for us are also there. God has said he will pour out his spirit to all our faculties, so that we can correct our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and actions. God will help us grow spiritually so that we apply the law of compensation or the law of cause and effect in only constructive ways, not just our spiritual self, but all that is part of us. So the day of the Lord means a decision. In Joel 3, verse 14, we read, "Multitudes are in the valley of decision. Here in the valley of Jehoshaphat will be a gathering of nations for God's judgment." And that judgment means learning divine law. They found that for every departure from the law, they must suffer in the life here and now. And that is the lesson of God's judgment. And so what does this symbolize? Now, the valley. The word valley symbolizes abundance, sources of water, sources of fertility, life, civilization, and all these good things, prosperity and hope. So this valley of Jehoshaphat will be a valley in which all of these things will be available to us. Now, we know Jehoshaphat, his name means the Lord judges. Jehovah has judged. He was king of Judah. Jehoshaphat was king of Judah from 873 to 849. He ruled 25 years. And the Valley of Jehoshaphat is in the area of the Kidron Valley. It's between the old city of Jerusalem and the Mount of Olives. Now, I think that it would be in our interest to just speak about the meanings of the word Judah. First of all, Judah represents the spiritual faculty that corresponds to prayer and praise, thanksgiving. It is, some people say it is our superconscious. That is Judah, and that indwells each one of us. Jerusalem is the habitation of peace, abiding consciousness of peace, and it's our spiritual power. And I wanted to say Zion is love's abode. It is where high, ruling, holy thoughts and ideas abide, our spiritual consciousness. So we're constantly seeing these words, Judah, Jerusalem, Zion. All that's our spiritual power that is within each one of us that is there. And so we can always go into it. When we go into our meditation, we move into our Jerusalem, Zion center. And it is mentioned here in the third chapter of Joel. Now, the nations that are gathered, Tyre, he is mentioned in chapter 3. And this is the realm of sensation in man's consciousness. So that Tyre is that realm of sensation. Sidon is mentioned. This is refers to an increase of ideas in the animal phases of thought of being in the individual. Philistia is the changeableness, transitoriness, error-based in outer material beliefs, thoughts based on senses. And he mentions also Egypt. Egypt being the realm of substance and life in the depths of the body consciousness, and Edom is the outer body, the physical phase of man's consciousness and organism. And so he has mentioned these places as being part of the group that is in the valley of Jehoshaphat at this ultimate day of the Lord. So these are parts of us that are also involved here. And these are not to be destroyed. They are not to be, horrors happen to them, erased from us. No, they are to be blessed. They are to be changed into that which is satisfying, that which is positive, that which will help us to grow and to be who we are. So that it's not about the destruction of the enemies of God. It's not about that. It's by learning divine law, we will find that every wonderful thing that God has to offer will be ours. And we will bring in this ultimate day of the Lord, all of us is embraced. All of us is shown to be of importance. And so it is this day of the Lord then, this ultimate enlightenment, understanding, and day of light, and learning the learning about what God is about is important. I just wanted to say that so that the nations that we have that are mentioned in chapter 3 are an aggregation of thoughts in the mind that are to be instructed through our Jerusalem, Judah, Zion consciousness. And so this is a very beautiful and wonderful thing that we have read that we can all experience. Once we let go of, once we understand the law of cause and effect, and once we decide that we are going to be sure that we only have good effects in our life, spiritual effects in our lives, the goodness that God has created for us in our life, once we've made that decision, then we can live as God has created us to live. We can live that beautiful, wonderful, magnificent life of health, wealth, and happiness, and all of the good things of God. I must say that the chapter, Joel, the book of Joel, has been an experience, really an experience. And so I hope it has been for you too. And so I'm going to allow anyone who wants to say a word to do so. Thanks so much.
Hello, everyone. This is Elva.
Go right ahead, dear.
Yes. So I'm just going to speak for myself.
Go right ahead.
You know. So
good.
So this is what Elva is thinking, you know. The day of the Lord. It is the day of, as you said, enlightenment and stuff. And they call it the day of judgment, the final judgment. That is when we no longer judge or condemn. I just love. And in the last book, we had affirmations and prayer. So my prayer, my affirmation is I will not condemn or injure myself, for I am a child of God. I will no longer hold the belief that I am not good enough, undeserving, to be in the garden, to be in that consciousness of Garden Eden, that I have to be punished. I have to be, punished by God. And I must change my consciousness and change what is happening in my world and make this my day, today, the day of the Lord, the day of, you know, ending all the judgment, changing my day of healing. And so I believe that I deserve better things. I believe that things will get better, as the song says. And then there will be a time when I forget or no longer remember this state of Babylon that I'm in now. I believe that when I experience lack, limitation, belief in separation, that I'm, you know, that, you know, while I'm still on this journey, that, you know, that I need to, at this point, I am wanting to get back into that Eden's consciousness where I knew that I had everything. I can come up out of this place of Egypt where I'm in bondage. I can come up from this state of lack and limitations that, you know, there's not enough or something is taking away my good. So nothing can keep me from my good. This is, you know, and I'm in Babylon when I believe these things. So my thing now is to, you know, to just change my consciousness. That's the bottom line. I have to change my consciousness. I have to change my way of thinking. I have to change my way of acting and change my way of being. And that's my day of the Lord, when the truth comes to me and there's no longer this battle, this struggle, this Armageddon or whatever. I'm not in that consciousness anymore. It's a new day, a new world. I've moved into this place of Jerusalem, peace and power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that the end of the third chapter of Joel does just that. And I'm glad that it brings in these nations that are part of our consciousness, an aggregation of thoughts in the mind that are to be instructed through the faculties, so that these are thoughts in our minds and, you know, things, places where we need improvement, places that we need changing. So it's a blessing, too, to know that we do have the faculties, we do have the knowledge. Anyway, we can acquire that knowledge through our study and through the light of God, the Holy Spirit, instructing us as to where to go and when to turn right and when to turn left and so forth. So we've got it made. It is just a beautiful thing. It's about practice, though. It's not going to something that happens once, you know, just one time. It is about our day-to-day living. But it is very, very, very encouraging. It's very, very encouraging. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we believe that we are separate from God for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. so, and this is what is holding us in bondage. This is an error thought. We're never mm-hmm. separated from God. Mm-hmm. Wherever God is, I am. Wherever, mm-hmm. you know, God is, I'm in the presence of God always, and God is always present in me, and I have to remember that. We have to remember that, and we remember, you know, we just have to remember that God is the Lord God is with us.
Yes, and you know one thing, I'm glad that you brought that up because that's one of the things about this day of the Lord, not just the ultimate one, but the one in chapter 2, too, that mm-hmm. we have to see that. Mm-hmm. The day of the Lord means that God is on, is in, God is here.
Now,
God is here. And that is not an easy concept, because we have been programmed to believe God is in the sky and God is everywhere, except that we have to seek God, that we have to we have all kinds of ideas about what God is and where God is and all that. I remember when I first heard that God is within, that was a difficult concept for me, and it still is in a certain way, because I think that our language and our way of expressing doesn't have that. I can't really explain that it doesn't have that. Philosophy, that thing behind it. You know how, I guess, nuance, I guess that's the word. Because sometimes when you say a word, you know, you get all of the associations with it, and that happens whenever we speak. But when it comes to God's being within, that I am part of God, God and I are one, it takes doing. When you bring that, but what I was going to say was this, that in Joel, when he speaks of the day of the Lord is present within you. It's there, it's there, it's there. And we let go of all of our addictions and preoccupations so that we can use that space to actually experience God's presence. That's what this book is about. That's what Joel is about. That's what Joel is about. You're absolutely right. The day of the Lord is the total, complete experience of the presence of God within you. Yes.
Yeah, and I was reading this book, it's called The Amazing Laws of Cosmic Mind of Power by Joseph Murphy. And at the end of each chapter, he has some little points to remember. And one of the points, it's three of them that I checked. It says, your mental attitude is cause and your experience is effect. And then he makes one that, because we talked about the law of cause and effect. And law, that's, you know, working. We got to work those laws just right. And your belief, then he said, your belief about God is your real belief about yourself. Man is belief expressed. And then there's one about heaven and hell. And this is what we believe, you know, that we're going to a hell somewhere. At some point we're going to be separated from God. We can never be separated from God. And it says man must divest himself of all this erroneous and false concept and realize that he makes his own heaven, harmony and peace, and his own hell, misery and suffering, here and now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. You say his name is Murphy, the author?
Yeah, his name is Joseph Murphy. I don't know when this book was published. It's just an old book I've had here, and it's about cosmic law. Let's see, it looks like it was published in 1973, this edition here. Maybe it started, copyright 1965. So it's an old book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's on The Amazing Laws of Cosmic Mind Power.
Okay. All right. So we can
bunch of laws here, different laws, laws of courage. Laws of courage, law of faith, law of healing, law of protection, and so on, law of love. Of course, you know that.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Law of prosperity.
This whole thing of the day of the Lord has to do with law, learning the law. Well, the law, of course, in effect, the law of compensation. And so these are very, very important to us. And to be able to enjoy the world that God has created for us and to thrive in it and enjoy life, we need to know these laws.
And understand that universal law, is listening to us,
mm-hmm.
and it's
mm-hmm.
conspiring with us.
Mm-hmm.
It conspires with us. And so we have to know these laws and know how they work. They conspire with us,
And so
if we misuse them, we're going to get, what we think is punishment. It is punishment, but God is not doing it.
No.
It's because we have misused the law.
So if we understand
how these laws work, then we will stop misusing them.
Mm-hmm. 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 So maybe we're going to take a look at this book. Look, every time we look at one of your books, I'm laughing, but I'm going to see about it.
Go through my library and pull out some of these.
No, well, let's try this. The Amazing Laws of Cosmic Mind Power. I think that's important. I think so.
Joseph,
what do you think,
Murphy? Dr.
What do you
Joseph
say,
Murphy?
Mary?
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah. No, it sounds good. Like you were saying, the wrath of the Lord has to do with, like, when we have negative thoughts and there's negative behaviors, and we do it to ourselves. That
yep.
God, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the law. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a misunderstanding.
Abuse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Abusing ourselves, and that's why I say it, I will stop. I will not abuse myself.
Yes,
I will
love,
not injure
by the way,
myself.
I love your affirmations. And so if
not
you
condemn
would,
or injure myself,
yes,
stop abusing
yes, I love
myself.
Your affirmations. I love your affirmations.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, and as you said, today is the day of the Lord. For me, it is the day of the Lord. And
yeah.
I must say that reading about this in Joel has been a very enlightening experience for me in a lot of ways. I am just completely knocked out by this Bible stuff, I can't wait to get to Amos and see what he says is different. Because, it used to be that once we heard of the different prophets and we know that they were all warning the people against the coming horrors that they had caused by their idolatry and turning away from God and all the horrors that they had done or didn't do. And I thought that all of them would be saying the same things, but they're not. Each prophet has and maybe I'll do a paper on it or something, each prophet has a different aspect of life. Et cetera, to talk about. So they're not all the same. They are quite, and each one is well taken. Each one is,
Come on, everybody.
Okay, so anyway, it's helping us to know that God is going to make it better. And I just wanted to say, through study, meditation, devotion to the Christ ideal, we put spirit first in our lives, and we can expect health, wealth, well-being, peace, love, and all that good stuff. We can expect those things. And we thank God for knowing that God is within us, always will be. We can never be separated. And the watchword is just love, 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 love,
yes, thank you, beloved ones.
Thank you. Peace and love. Peace and love. Peace and love.
Peace and love.
Love, love, love.
You're confused. But don't worry.